think we are ready to get started now. Welcome to the Root signing session. My name is Patrick Wallström from .se. First off, the sound in this room is going to be recorded, so if you have any questions, please use the microphone. We are going to have questions during the talk, so if you have any questions, just raise your hand and we will answer them. Okay. First off, I will talk a little bit about the bigger interest in DNSSEC since the Kaminsky bug was discovered last summer. So just to show you the interest, last week at the ICANN meeting, this was the amount of topics in the DNSSEC workshop. There are more and more TLDs that are going to be signed, and everybody's talking about DNSSEC, so the interest is in DNSSEC is peaking. There was a study done by CCNSO that was published, I think it was last month, in October, and it shows that among the highest priorities that of topics that ICANN should work with is DNSSEC. And other topics are IDNs and IPv6. CCNSO is a workshop within ICANN or a sub-organization within ICANN that works with country code top-level domains. The study was done the first time in 2007, and it was reinitiated after .ses talked about ANISA about the old study, so it was done again. And you can find the survey on the link on the top of this PDF that will be distributed after the meeting. This is just to show who participated in the study. It was more and more interested in the European region. Among the queried TLDs, the amount of TLDs that actually know what DNSSEC is very high. It was 92%. And some of them are implementing DNSSEC right now, or have already implemented DNSSEC. I think today it's approximately 10 TLDs that are signed. 80% of the surveyed TLDs have plans for implementing DNSSEC. And those who are not implementing DNSSEC have currently other priorities or lack of resources to undertake such a project right now. It is a quite time-consuming process to implement DNSSEC in a TLD. And some mentions also a lack of assigned route, and they're waiting for that as well. So, among the queried TLDs, in what phase are your project right now? So, many of them are implementing DNSSEC right now and looking at different kinds of tools. A lot of them are using Bind to do DNSSEC. Some plans to use OpenDNSSEC. .se is not currently using OpenDNSSEC, but we plan to do that in January. Most of them are going to use HSMs, which is a hardware security modules for protecting the keys. Half of the queried TLDs are going to deploy DNSSEC within 2 years. That means about 30 or 40 TLDs within 2 years. And almost all of them think that the signed route is very important for a good DNS service. So now I'm going to present our speakers. They are from the three organizations that are working with the signed route currently. First, we have Jacob Schlüter, who has done a lot of work with DNSSEC and route and also for .se. He's not going to speak, but he will answer any questions from the audience. We have Ashley Heinemann from NTIA. We have Joe Wardley. From VeriSign, and then Joe Abley from ICANN. So, Ashley, welcome to the microphone.
Thank you all for having me today, as well as my colleagues from VeriSign and ICANN, to talk about our efforts to date with implementing DNSSEC at the root. I'm going to be touching at a very broad high level our efforts to date, how we got to the point we're at now, and how we plan to move forward. And much of the details will follow with the presentations given by VeriSign and ICANN. So a quick review of the past 12 months, how we got here. I think probably a number of you have seen the next couple of slides, but just wanted to briefly reiterate, there we go, how we got to this point. Outside of Kaminsky's announcements, it became very clear that there was quite a bit of interest in moving forward with some level of implementation of DNSSEC at the root. Taking all of this interest to heart, NTIA, which is the organization I'm with, just to be clear, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration at the U.S. Department of Commerce, we issued what we call a notice of inquiry. It was basically to see what level of interest there was to implement DNSSEC at the root level and how best that could be done if there was agreement to move forward. We received 55 substantive comments. 55 doesn't sound like that much, but in terms of an NOI process, actually getting substantive comments isn't always the case. So we were very pleased with the turnout that we got in this NOI process. So as I said, 55 by the November 24th, 2008 deadline. The NOI itself, the proposals put forward by ICANN and VeriSign, as well as all the supporting documentation and all the comments that we received are still posted on our website and will continue to be for the foreseeable future at this URL. So the results, first and foremost, I would say 98%, almost unanimous consensus among the respondents that DNSSEC should be implemented at the root zone level. Other important points that were raised through the process that we took to heart include that it should be implemented as soon as practically possible. We did have some respondents saying it should have been implemented yesterday, it could be implemented by tomorrow, but I think the strong message that came out of this process was as soon as practically possible. In that same vein, it should be implemented in a manner that maintains the security and stability of the DNS. To a certain extent, there was quite a few respondents saying that DNSSEC implementation should be aligned with the functions of the root zone management process. That's not to say the current process, but in general, to avoid confusion, at least from the TLD perspective, and making changes to the root, that root zone management process and DNSSEC should be aligned to a certain extent. And also that DNSSEC is about data integrity and authenticity, not control, which we got the point and we're taking that to heart. So post-NOI, we did reach a determination that DNSSEC will be implemented at the authoritative root zone level. We are going to utilize an interim approach that is closely aligned with the existing root zone management process. This will be utilized to ensure rapid implementation while maintaining the security and stability of the DNS. The gist here is that we didn't want to, we're looking at this as a probably the biggest change that, at least under NTIA's authority, we've ever done to the root zone file. Or the management process. We didn't want to introduce any unnecessary changes at this time, so that's why we're going to stick and align things with not only the current process, but with the organizations involved, where they have expertise, where they have tried and tested methods of doing things. So once implemented, once everything seems to be functioning, working, we intend to initiate some sort of review of this interim approach, taking into consideration any advancement in technology, process, and or procedure related to DNSSEC, and then determine whether the approach that we're utilizing needs to be adjusted in any way. Just want to stress that implementation overall is not going to be a static process. We do see it as iterative, just as the root zone management process. And that being the case, they'll also include ongoing consultation with the DNS technical community. Just wanted to provide a visual here. I think both VeriSign and ICANN they have their own visual construct of how this is going to work. This is the current root zone management process. This is just to articulate what's already happening today, which is essentially the TLD operator puts a change request into ICANN, who is acting as the IANA functions operator. They process this change request. It's then forwarded to NTIA acting as the administrator. It's actually not reflected here very well, but also is sent to VeriSign at the same time. Essentially, what NTIA does is just ensure that the processes and procedures set up by ICANN have been followed, and if there's any glaringly obvious error that's in place. And so, assuming that there is no error in place and the processes have been followed, we authorize a change, and then VeriSign, as the root zone maintainer, edits and generates its own file, and then distributes it to the root server operators. So root zone management plus DNSSEC. Just want to articulate here the close overlay that we're trying to achieve, at least with this interim initial implementation. In the actual root zone management process itself, not that much is changing, other than the TLD operator, along with their change request. This can also include changes in their DNSSEC public key information. It'll go through that same process of as being new information being added to the root. NTIA's role here does not change. The only other change, at least in this process, is that this didn't show up very well, I apologize, is that there is now a signing process that happens in between the edit generation process, and now a signed root zone will be distributed. Below here in red just articulates how the key management is being proposed, which is the key signing key itself will be managed primarily by ICANN. They will also be distributing the public portion of the key information. VeriSign, who will be signing the root, will have management authority over the zone signing key, as they will need it, I guess, approximately twice daily to sign the root. And I'll leave the other details with respect to this to the presentations that I'll be given shortly. So consultation and documentation. Early on, as the announcement was made that DNSSEC would be implemented in the root, a commitment to consult with the internet technical community moving forward. Also, just to reiterate, this is an iterative process, and we hope to continue this consultation as long as necessary or as long as there's interest. Documentation. ICANN and VeriSign are working collaboratively in the development of documentation. It's going to be a lot of documentation. It became very clear early on that by the time things are operational, we're going to have quite a set of documentation. Most, if not all, will be made publicly available. Starting off this documentation process, the Department of Commerce, primarily NTIA and our sister organization, the National Institute of Standards and Technologies, we drafted a high-level requirements document for VeriSign and ICANN to take into consideration as they develop their implementation strategy and testing plans. The requirements include a baseline architecture, security requirements, and basic functionality requirements. ICANN and VeriSign are also required to develop and make available access control policies, auditing and accountability procedures, key rollover procedures, contingency plans, and emergency procedures. So this should give a taste in terms of what the documentation will ultimately result from this process. And ICANN and VeriSign are working very diligently and drafting these. Just a note, for those of you who have seen the requirements document, there was initially some concern with respect to the multiple references to NIST specifications. Just wanted to clarify that these were included as non-binding guidelines and recommendations. They were there for illustrative purposes and examples for ICANN and VeriSign to refer to. Comparable standards out there couldn't be substituted by ICANN and VeriSign as they established their security policies. So the status of the document, we consulted with technical experts. We also consulted with ICANN and VeriSign, as they're the ones who will have to follow them. We modified the document to take into account these consultations, and it has just recently been posted on our website at this URL. Unfortunately, if you don't have this URL right now, it's not very visible if you just go to our website, but we'll be taking care of that in the future. But you can find it if you just go straight to this link. The next document that actually has just been circulated is this high-level technical architecture. This was not a requirement, but we all agreed that it would be very helpful to the interested community to have a snapshot of how things are going to work. This was drafted by ICANN and VeriSign and their design team. It was based largely on the DOC requirements, but there are aspects in this document that are being proposed by ICANN and VeriSign. Again, I want to stress this is a high-level description. In-depth details are going to be included in accompanying documentation. This was circulated last week to members of the technical expert community. I want to stress that this is a working draft. While we hope to get input and any kind of feedback as soon as possible so they can be incorporated into the architecture and perhaps impact any further documentation, but it's very likely that as things proceed with testing and with implementation that this document will evolve based on lessons learned through this process. The document is also posted at this URL. If anybody is interested, we're happy to accept any comment, even though we may not have gone directly to you. Feel free to contact me or anyone from the ICANN and VeriSign design team with any input or thoughts you may have. Forthcoming documentation will be the DNSSEC policy and practice statements. Both ICANN and VeriSign have drafted them for themselves. It essentially states practices and provisions employed in root zone signing and zone distribution services. So it outlines the respective roles and responsibilities for the two entities. They've been submitted to NTIA, and we are hoping to get these circulated and posted in the near future. So next steps, again, at a high level here, Joe and Joe will follow up in their presentations. But ICANN and VeriSign will continue producing documentation. I know that this is taking up a lot of their time, but I think at the end this is going to be very helpful to the community and to the entities involved in implementation. We will continue to seek community input. We will continue to post this documentation as it becomes available. ICANN and VeriSign will continue to work on implementation and testing and ultimately assigned route. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much. And I don't know, questions now or later, happy either way.
Thank you. I'm Joe Waldron from VeriSign. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the root zone signing, and hopefully I'll go into a little more detail following up from the comments that that Ashley made. As she mentioned, this was done with significant cooperation between the work that that VeriSign has done with ICANN, with specifically in the INA functions that they operate, with Department of Commerce, and with a lot of the feedback that we've gotten from the technical community. So it's really a collaborative effort and a lot of work that's gone into this. Some of the vocabulary and language Ashley alluded to, one of the hallmarks, I guess, of this process needs to be transparency. It needs to be the implementation of signing the root zone is a momentous occasion within the DNS. Probably I'd agree that it's probably the most significant change that's been made. So we want to make sure that all of the procedures and processes, the architecture, how we're doing this is well understood. And really, this is part of the transparency process is going out and making sure that the community is aware exactly of what's being done and how it's being done. Needs to be an auditable process, and this is really built into the design. There's intent to conduct periodic and frequent audits of the process. And then obviously with something as critical as the root zone, the highest levels of security are absolutely critical, and you'll see some of that. Some of the roles and responsibilities, I'll go into a little bit more detail of how the roles break out in terms of the three organizations that manage the root zone process today. ICANN as the IANA functions operator. Some of the new components that are added in that you saw on Ashley's chart is actually managing the key signing key, and in the role that they perform today in the interface with the TLD operators is receiving any updates to the DNS information for the TLDs. Now they'll also be accepting the DS records from those operators, essentially following the same process or similar process to what's in place today. And then, again, similar to the current root zone change request process, IANA will verify and process those changes, forward those to the Department of Commerce for authorization, and then VeriSign will implement in the root zone any and all of the changes that have been authorized. NTIA does the authorization, which will include now DS records, key signing keys, and essentially ensure that the processes that we've defined have been followed. VeriSign, as the root zone maintainer, will also manage the key signing key that will be used to sign the root zone, incorporate the changes that have been authorized, and then distribute the signed root zone to all of the root server operators. This is, for the most part, the same diagram that Ashley showed, which overlays the current process with the additions of the key management components at the bottom, where ICANN generates and manages the key signing key, publishes those. VeriSign will generate and manage the zone signing keys, use those to generate the signed root zone, and publish that out to the root zone operators. Protecting the keys is a very important component of this. We need to make sure that the keys aren't compromised, that they're appropriately secured. This is a diagram that shows the KSK layers of security, which I think is very standard. At VeriSign, we've been operating in our SSL business for a long time. This is a similar type of architecture in terms of the physical security to protect the access to the key signing and the storage of the keys that are used for our SSL business, and we're essentially following a very similar process in terms of the layers of physical security that ICANN will be operating to protect the key signing key. Ashley mentioned the DPS. The only thing I'll add to this is, again, this really is something that follows similar to what we have been operating in any X09 certificate authority, managing a CPS or a certification practice statement. This is an analogous system. But rather than have one DPS, there are two DPS statements. One for the key signing key that is a statement that is a companion to the zone signing key DPS that, you know, the two of those documents together really constitute the full scope of the DNSSEC practice statement for signing the root. And these are the documents that should be available for review shortly. This shows the linkage and the process of the separate key signing key and zone signing keys. You'll see at the bottom the DPS documents reflected there that really tie these together, and then the separate processes where with the ICANN staff and the other community members that are participating in that signing and key management, and then similar on the zone signing side with VeriSign managing that. Again, as part of this concept of transparency, community trust is important, and in signing the key or managing the key signing key, the proposal is to engage other community members. Some of the ones that are listed here at the bottom, it may be hard to read, but members of the CCNSO, the GNSO, IAB, regional internet registries, and would participate in actually signing and maintaining the key signing key or providing personnel that would be available as observers, which I think is also mentioned here in terms of auditing and transparency. Some of the parameters that we'll that we intend to implement for the key signing key, it'll be a 2048-bit RSA key intended to roll over as infrequently as possible. Probably a minimum of 2 years, maximum of 5 years. The key signing key doesn't need to roll over that frequently, but we need to make sure that we don't lose the capability and experience in how to do that. So you don't want to make it indefinite. And part of the deployment plan, we will actually be practicing that as well. And we'll be using RFC 5011 as the guide. That's the RFC that covers the automated updates of DNSSEC trust anchors. Sure, go ahead.
The length, the rollover time before the production, or is that something that will be decided in some years?
I don't think there is really a definitive answer to what the scheduled time is right now.
It's not decided upon when you start using the key. It will be rolled later on, and the exact date of the key roll will be decided later. It could be depend on multiple things.
So it could be decided like after the production?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We don't know from the start whether it will be valid for 2 years or 5 years or whatever in between.
I think that's right. One other point, though, is we're not going to start rolling the KSK without giving everybody lots of notice.
Yeah.
So, you know, a schedule will be announced at some point, and there will be plenty of time after that announcement before the first roll happens.
The zone signing key will roll more frequently. It's a 1024 RSA key. We will roll this every quarter, so that's four times per year. And that will be used to sign with NSEC. There's really no requirement for NSEC 3 with the root zone. I think that was actually in the requirement specification that we would use NSEC. And for all of these, we actually intend to use SHA-256. I think that eliminates the need to do a migration in the near term. So I think we'll proceed with that. The signature validity is an overlapping rolling period of 15 days for the DNSSEC or the DNS key that will be re-signed every 10 days, and then every 7 days for the RSIG, which is in our twice daily zone generation that we do today. So you'll see that re-signed. Essentially every 12 hours that we on the same schedule that we're doing today. Key ceremonies, again with the KSK, it's that same every 2 to 5 years, and ICANN will manage that ceremony, as we talked about earlier. And then we've created a new term, which is this KSR or key signing request. And that is to facilitate that communication between ICANN and VeriSign so that we can get the ZSK to sign the ZSK for the upcoming quarter as we do the quarterly rollovers of the zone signing key. As the other Joe mentioned, communicating the trust anchor is absolutely critical. ICANN will publish this on a website. I don't know that you've announced where that is yet, but getting that communicated is absolutely critical. And the intent is to be able to publish this in a way that facilitates automated processing of that. The deployment plan, I'll go into this very briefly, and then Joe will go into more detail on this. But the intent is to have an incremental rollout of the signed route. This is something that, if you think about some of the principles of DNS, that you want the same answer to be given everywhere, but we need to distribute the signed route zone across a number of various the 12 different route server operators. So how do you do that in a secure and stable manner? So there has been a lot of discussion and a lot of community input into how to get this done. So our intent is to roll this out gradually over various root server operators and then watch the behavior that we see. We're already seeing a significant amount of traffic that's asking for DNSSEC information. So the DO bit turned on. We see, I think, about 50% of the traffic to the root servers that we operate. So what happens when that begins, once you have a signed route, How much of an impact does that have? What kind of behavior do we see? So we want to see that gradually as we roll this out across the root servers, and then respond to that as we get feedback. But again, we need to make sure that we don't have an incrementally signed route so that we'll say L route has a signed route and the rest of the routes of operators are unsigned, because that obviously would cause a few problems. So initially, we'll use a non-validatable, if that's the right word for it, key or a dummy key that will not be able to be validated until the end of the deployment across all of the root servers, when the actual key will be updated. And here's the timeline for getting the full signing completed. December 1st, we'll begin signing the root with the non-validatable keys, and then gradually begin rolling that through all of the root server operators, receiving feedback, going through this iterative process to make sure that we address any unexpected or new developments that need to be accounted for. That will be a deployment and testing period from January through July, and then on July 1st is the production full deployment with a valid signed route. Any questions? Yes.
This is a draft schedule, so when do you expect the schedule to be set?
This is a draft timeline. I think that as we begin the rollout, if there are unexpected, I mean, this is what we intend to do right now. It's only draft in that, you know, we aren't going to commit to signing on a certain date if we see an event along the way that would cause us to have to change the schedule.
Okay, so that's the only, I mean, if things work, you expect this to to be the
right
schedule.
That, yes, this is the timeline that we're all driving towards. I think, as Ashley mentioned, you know, there will be reviews. We'll have to receive feedback, see what kind of behavior is actually observed as we are going through and doing this. But this is the intended schedule. Feel free to correct me or add anything if you want to. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Yes.
You didn't mention anything about reusing signatures. Will you do that?
About?
Reusing the signatures. You said that you will resign every each hour or whatever it was, but will you reuse old signatures for a period of time until you renew it?
I'm not sure I understand. I'm not sure I'm following.
What do you mean by reusing signatures?
Yeah, if you resign the zone each time,
yes,
will you reuse the old signatures from the previous zone, or will you produce completely new signatures for all the records?
When we re-sign the zone, then all the signatures that are made by the ZSK will be new. However, there will still be RR6 cached around the world that are from the previous signatures, so we have to make sure that the validity periods overlap so that anybody who receives an old RR6 from a cache will still be able to validate the data. So the validity periods of the signatures will overlap, as I think the slides mentioned. So in that sense, signatures that are, you know, older but still valid will still be able to be used. But every time we sign the zone, all the RR6 will be new for the records that are not the DNS key RR set.
You didn't mention anything about emergency key rollover. Could you comment that?
Emergency key rollover.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Well,
yeah, you want to?
I can make some comments about it. The requirements document from NTIA, of course, specified that we have to have procedures available in case any of the keys are compromised. In the case of a ZSK compromise, the effect is that VeriSign need to generate a new set of ZSKs, and they need to get signatures on those, so we need to expedite one of these ceremonies, which involves the processing of a KSR. In the case of a KSK compromise, then depending on exactly where the compromise is, effectively we need to discard the old material and expedite the generation of a new set of KSKs, publish a new trust anchor, and then using that new KSK, sign a KSR that we receive from VeriSign. So the precise details of exactly how the emergency will be handled depend slightly on the emergency. I mean, for example, if the problem is that a facility has been compromised, then we wouldn't reuse the same facility. If it's a different kind of problem, then perhaps we'd react in a slightly different way. But we certainly expect to have, in fact, we've already started provisioning two different facilities to do these things, two sets of all the HSMs with independent vendors and things like that. So we have a large amount of diversity built in with the expectation that we can react to an emergency in a suitable way.
Okay, Stefan Hagnell from .se. You said you had some requirements, but you haven't really worked out the procedures for doing this or yet. How fast will the, what does the requirement say? How fast should you be able to do an emergency queue rollover, for instance?
I don't have those timings at the tip of my tongue.
I mean, this is
Jacob. Really, do you remember?
It's depend for the ZSK. It's a very short amount of time, of course, because it doesn't affect people in general. If we're going to roll the KSK, we will have a lot of problems, of course,
yeah.
Or at least not ICANN and VeriSign in per se, but most other people, since all basically every validating resolver on Earth needs to be rebootstrapped, and that's nothing we. I mean, it's not a matter of hours. It's more in the order of months.
Oh, I don't expect to have an answer on this question. I just ask if there are any plans for the future.
There are plans, but nothing more specific yet.
Yeah, someone's in the DPS already. It's closing time.
Yeah. Okay, so again, we're interested in thoughts and feedback. If you have positive comments, you can give them to any of us. If you have any other comments, here's the rest of the team. Although Joe, you're right up on top there, but, and Jacob's on, yeah, anyway.
I have one question.
Yes. I think that's.
Why not have a decent routine so you have do it a bit more often?
Well, I think that's one of the factors in terms of how often it needs to be done is you need to make sure that you've maintained the proficiency and the capability to do it, but you don't want to do it too often.
Yeah, and another aspect of this is that we intend to use 5011 to facilitate automatic handling in the client, in the validator, of Trust Anchor rollover. And 5011 support in shipping software right now is very weak. There are a number of packages you can get, but no package really integrates this very easily for the operator into a single package, so you can just turn it on, perhaps on by default. So the decision as to exactly when we roll the KSK depends somewhat on that code maturing in the field. So if we happen to get code in a year's time that is widely deployed that supports 5011, and that's going to be an easy way of doing a scheduled rollover of the KSK, then perhaps that will induce us to do a more frequent KSK rollover. If it takes longer for that code to mature and to be deployed, then perhaps we might wait longer. But you're right. I mean, in the event that we don't have an operational requirement to actually roll the key, we still need to exercise the operational procedures to make sure that nobody forgets. Certainly, we don't want the situation where we have no staff left who were around on day one who can remember how to do it. So, yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah. Okay. I think you're up, Joe.
Okay.
See if I can help him out.
How do I make it full screen?
I don't
Control
know.
L? Oh, where the hell's L? Oh, there it is. Okay, so these slides are specifically about the deployment. So this is a material that really concerns the time between now and July 2010, according to the schedule that you saw before. So our goals with this, they may seem fairly obvious, but maybe worth stating. The idea of this is to sign the root. That's the purpose of the whole exercise, the purpose of this deployment. We need that to be a transparent process. We need to have sufficient auditing on the processes that are used, that everybody can trust that the procedures have been followed accurately. And ultimately, we actually want DNSSEC to be deployed. So we know in some cases there are TLDs who have DNSSEC plans, but who are waiting for the root to be signed. We also presume that until more authority servers, more TLDs are signed, there will be limited deployment of DNSSEC in validators. So we see this as helping to kickstart the process of deployment across the entire system. So there are a couple of things that we think are worth considering. And one of the first ones Joe mentioned briefly during one of his slides, A large number of resolvers today set the DO bit in the EDNS0 header, regardless of the fact that they are not configured to do anything with secure answers if they receive them. So at the moment, this has very limited impact. At the moment, you send a query with DO equals 1 or DO equals 0 to a root server, you get the same answer. Once the root is signed, then the answer you get will suddenly be much larger. Large enough in some cases that we have to start worrying about whether UDP fragmentation works along the path between the server and the client, and in some cases perhaps whether fallback to TCP works. And it is thought that there are many assumptions that have been made by people who build things like firewalls and NAT boxes and other middleware that perhaps don't fulfill these requirements as far as a transparent network path between client and server. So it's possible, as soon as the root servers start returning large responses, that those clients behind such broken middleware will not be able to see any responses from these servers. So the second issue that we identified was that of rollback. If we start deploying a signed root zone and we experience many things breaking, for example, according to the previous slide, because large responses can't be handled, we may then have to deal with a community of people who can get large responses and who have decided to enable validation, for whom rollback would then break their validators. Because if we unside the root zone, any validator that assumes that the root is signed will suddenly see an insecure answer and will throw it away. So we just broke the DNS for all those people who actually are in a good position to deploy DNSSEC. So this is what we came up with. The first aspect of this is to deploy incrementally. So we will serve a signed zone from just one root server to start with and leave the other 12 root servers serving the unsigned zone. So the effect of this will be that any client that sends a query to LRoot will receive a large response, and if they're unable to handle that, we expect that client to be able to try a different root server and get a smaller response. So for that client, the root system as a whole will not be broken. But we will have started deploying, and hopefully we'll have some ability to be able to judge the reaction of the client population to those actions. So after L, we'll do J, and then we'll follow with other root servers on a schedule that will become more apparent as we gain experience with the rollout. And then lastly, our plan is to do A root. So the reason we propose leaving A until last is because there is some thought that A is special, in the sense that some clients, instead of just trying a random server out of the available 13 servers, will do a linear search and start at A, or perhaps will rely on A answering without necessarily trying other servers. Our goal really is to try and understand this behavior a little better as we go through. Leave A till last. The second aspect to our proposal is the use of this deliberately unvalidatable root zone. So the zone that is served first by L, and then by L and J, and then by a gradually increasing set of servers until we reach the full set, will have DNSSEC information. It will produce large responses from servers, but it will not be possible to use that extra information in the responses to validate anything. So in doing this, we try and avoid the situation where we have a community of validators that start to depend on the root being signed, which would cause problems if we decided to roll back. And this is an example of a key that could be used in the root zone. Now, the reason it has this text in it is many validator implementations actually require a trust anchor to be pasted into a configuration file. So we have some hope that if somebody was to paste this in, there would be some clues in what they were pasting to indicate that what they're doing is a bad idea. So this is the difficult part now. The difficult slide is measurement. So in principle, we could say we're deploying this incrementally server by server. We will measure as much as we can as we roll these things out. And if there are problems, for example, there are clients that persistently are unable to talk to L, and instead switch to different servers, perhaps we'll be able to notice that by measurement. So this is an easy thing to say and a harder thing to do. The root servers receive an awful lot of unwanted traffic that's useless traffic from one perspective or another. It could be out of protocol, or it could be repeated queries for the same thing that are not being cached. There are many different examples of traffic that are received by the root servers, which is not useful traffic. So in some sense, trying to spot a single well-configured validator that moves, or resolver, that moves from L to a different server on a persistent basis is a bit of a needle in a haystack to find. So we've had some ideas about how we can do this from the server side. For example, just isolating priming queries, which are the special things that root servers have to deal with that other servers don't. Another part of this measurement will be, of course, watching traffic levels to see whether we see major traffic switch between servers. But again, since so much of the traffic is unwanted, that seems possibly unlikely to give good answers. The other aspect to this is providing tools to the community and to operators to allow them to determine whether or not they have a restricted path between their resolver and a root server. There are some of those tools already. OARC, DNS OARC provides one that's been around for a while. And we hope perhaps that some DNS vendors will add additional logging and things to their clients to be able to allow people to be able to tell if they have trouble reaching particular root servers because of the large responses. We of course plan to test the precise sort of construction of this deliberately unvalidatable zone before we deploy it. We'll test that with all the resolver code that we can find to try and ensure that it doesn't cause any catastrophic failure. Our testing so far suggests that it won't. And really, the key part to this deployment is to try and keep people informed of what we're doing and to listen, so that if anybody has proposals or suggestions for how we should do things or not do things, we, of course, are here to listen. And as the deployment proceeds, we expect to continue making presentations like this and to participate on the usual mailing lists so that people have a good idea of what's going on. And if they see operational problems, perhaps they have some background to be able to track some answers to their questions. That's it. Any questions?
Hi, my name is Magnus Sandberg. I'm quite new in this community, but I have a question about the middleware. Everybody says it can be a problem and so on, and as the resolver has the DOBIT set for a while, and in some countries we already have the DNSSEC, so then we would find out in this country if the middleware is a problem or not. So isn't there some knowledge about the middleware already?
I think you're right, and Sweden's early deployment of DNSSEC is a good example of the amount of comfort we can get from experience we already have. There are some queries, principally priming queries, though, that .se servers don't have to cope with. So it's possible that there are deployed validators, resolvers, or DNS clients in, for example, embedded systems and things like that, which aren't currently requesting names under .se, but which do expect to be able to use the DNS for other reasons. And those may see a problem. So while it's good to have that comfort, I don't think it's safe to be able to say that we have all the information we need. Okay, well, if anything occurs to anybody later during the meeting or at any time after we've left, we can always be reached by email. So feel free to ask questions. Thanks.
Okay, thank you all for coming, and thank you for coming in such a long way to talk about root signing.
What do you fear most? I mean, where do you...
Fear itself.
That's been used before.
What do you think? Do you think it will work, or do you think we would see problems?
Well, you know, I'm happy to say I think it will work. I think that's a good prediction to make. What we're trying to do, though, is not necessarily to assume that it will fail and go through an elaborate process because of that. But we need to deploy this because it is so important for the DNS. We need to deploy it in such a way that plausibly we can say we took all the measures necessary to ensure that we're being suitably conservative. I mean, the root zone is important. The whole DNS hangs on it. You could almost say, from the point of view of the average client, the whole internet hangs on it. We know that packet is a packet and doesn't require the DNS, but to the average consumer, the DNS is important. So I think the approach that we're taking, which is to try and take as much care as possible, but at the same time move at a reasonable speed to get it deployed, is a reasonable compromise.
I don't know if this is a fear, but I think working for a government, there's a whole different side of concerns, possibly fears, and that the way the DNS works and the way things are introduced in the DNS is that, oh, just do it, and if something breaks, we'll fix it. That's not always an approach that's palatable to governments. But we're learning to deal with it, and we're hoping we don't get to a point where anything breaks. But other issues, not really a concern, but going through all this effort and nothing really comes of it, and that other TLDs don't, there's not a whole lot of uptake in DNSSEC. We've always been told that this is the crutch that people are using. There's no signed route. That's what's holding it up. So we'll see what actually happens once there is a signed route. Things like training, educational awareness, making sure that, you know, there's only so much you can do at the root. There's a whole lot down the hierarchy that needs to happen as a result for there to be, well, if there's going to ever really be full DNSSEC deployment, it's not just hinging on the root. So it's just a matter of seeing what happens and what other people can do to assist in this process and getting the word out and making sure that other people can carry on as well.
I think .se has done a lot to prove some of the failures that you can do with DNS for now. <so. laughs> I think having correct processes for everything you do is the most important thing right now.
Okay, so then we have a signed route in half a year or a little bit more. How long time do you think it will take before the resolvers are updated with the root key? I mean, without them having the root key, the whole operation was meaningless.
Yeah, I think the bigger question is how long it will take for people to turn on validation at all.
Yeah, but that's the same thing.
I think it's effectively the same thing, yeah. Yeah, as far as the trust anchor for the root goes in particular, one thing that we didn't mention is exactly how we will publish that. There were two lines on the slide. We have a document amongst the stack of documents that Ashley mentioned, which covers just the publication of the trust anchor, and we will make that available in various forms at well-known URLs so that software can fetch it automatically. I haven't heard from any software vendors about whether they expect to ship anything with their code. I presume they wouldn't ship a trust anchor because that might become stale. But presumably people will use the mechanisms and, for example, the URLs, the stable URLs for receiving trust anchors, perhaps in conjunction with their regular software rollout through Microsoft and Apple and other such people, to allow that those trust anchors to be pushed out to servers in some sort of reasonably secure way to start the whole thing rolling. But really, until people turn on validation, it's impossible to know exactly how useful this is going to be. I mean, validators need to be running first.
And we should also mention that since you are using or planning to use RSA 256 as the signature mechanism, there will be a slight delay since people need to upgrade their resolvers or validating resolvers to the latest versions. So, for example, by 9.7 or the latest versions of Unbound will be needed for the root zone. And I think that deployment will be possibly the limiting factor, which in this case is actually not that bad because we will get a slower deployment at the start.
Okay, I don't know all the details about our DNSSEC we are running at .se, you know more of them than I do, but one thing that I think is a little bit tricky is the updating of the resolver when we have to do our annual KSK update, and if we have to do with some sort of emergency key rollover. As I understand, you're saying that you would like to see that RFC 5011 will be in place. My question is really, if you start with this, and then the first time you are actually making a new key rollover is in 2 years, will you be able to have any grip at all of who's actually running DNSSEC, which resolvers around the world? I mean, we have a problem in Sweden knowing who's running this, but I know Mats, we could tell him it's time to change the key, but you have the whole world, you should inform, and if it will go as long as 2 years, will there be a possibility to, I mean, could you expect everybody to have RFC 5011 implemented or not? Will that be the large challenge the first time you make a key rollover?
It will be a challenge to actually tell people from the start that they need to have RFC 5011 support to do this automatically. They need to revisit the ICANN website from time to time or read the appropriate mailing list to get the new information about the new keys. Just that's for .se.
Will they do it?
There will be some damage, I'm sure.
How long a key overlap will we have for the KSK?
None.
Well, none
except for the required.
None is not possible.
Except for there are some requirements in 5011 for the overlap, but we will only have minimal amount of overlap, which is in this case will be
1 month, I think.
60 days or 70 days within that order. It's more than the 30 days, which is the minimum, but it's less than 3 months.
It's maybe worth mentioning that there are some solutions already to this kind of problem. I mean, new X509 trust anchors, new CAs, are pushed out towards end users at the moment, and there are processes to do that. With DNSSEC, in some sense, we are fortunate that we have extra abilities to be able to do it by doing these in-band transitions according to 5011 timers and such things. It's also, in some sense, a bad idea because there's no opportunity to just click OK and continue if you have an old trust anchor, because you just don't get the answer.
Unless there's support in browsers for validation.
You guessed that the trust anchor would not be distributed with the source code of the software, but at least in the Unix world, you get the hint file with the software today, so you could get at least the hint anchor by the software. And as you say, modern operating system has some sort of updating, Windows update or whatever, and if it's 60 or 70 days, okay, after these 60 days, the commercial operating systems has to staff up their customer support for those who haven't run the update, but I think that there is mechanisms outside this RFC that could manage the updates, at least in up-to-date operating systems.
I should clarify that the 60 days is just the interval during which you could do the automatic key rollover. If you distribute trust anchors using some other mechanism like your software update, you could get the key much earlier if we have planned key roll. So that could be in the order of months before it's actually been used. But if you want to use 5011 and you're offline for more than around 60 days, then you are in trouble. But then you are in trouble anyway.
Just by being offline.
Yeah. But we know that. Try being offline for 60 days.
Well, I apologize if you already mentioned it, but I didn't catch it. So, do you have an idea about how you will accept DS records from TLD operators? Or how will you take care of if a TLD operator will need to remove DS records from the root zone or this stuff?
As far as submitting DS records, I don't work in the part of ICANN that deals with the IANA function of dealing with the TLDs, so I'm not especially up to date on this, but I think the idea is that there is DS records will be collected in some sensible way from TLD operators because there is more at stake with the DS record than there is perhaps with an NS set. There will be additional checking to make sure that the DS record that is sent is accurate. And examples of the kinds of checking you can do are present in the ITAR today, if you've seen the ITAR, the Interim Trust Anchor Repository. Once the DS records are present, then there is an authorization chain, as you saw on the various diagrams, which involve that data being sent to the Department of Commerce and then subsequently to VeriSign for incorporation into the zone. So that takes some time. The requirements document that Department of Commerce originally circulated specified some minimum times for adding and removing a DS record, I think, but I don't have them in my head right this second.
I think it was 48 hours, or within 48 hours, or be able to do it in 48 hours. It's not clear on if that's a requirement or a requirement to have processes in place that you could do it in 48 hours. But of course, it would, the intention would be to do it as quickly as possible. In terms of the TLD putting in the request, it's not clear how the key information that's already in the ITAR will be transferred into the route, but we will be working on revising the existing template that we use already today for any other change requests. It'll just be adding a field for the DS record. So that's how we haven't done it yet, but that's the plan.
Right, and one minor detail there is that we don't expect to take the data that's currently in the ITAR and publish that directly in the root zone. We expect TLDs to decide themselves on their own timing of when it's suitable to have a DS record in the root zone and to manage that process themselves. So the question of whether the trust anchor will be in the ITAR or the root zone or both or just one, that's up to the TLD. That's not anything that we're going to impose on anybody.
And if I understand correctly, I think the plan now is to not, well, at least ICANN's plan is to not retire the ITAR and to have it there as an option for those TLDs that don't want to use the signed route process.
Is that a question?
Yeah.
Okay. I think the position has always been that the ITAR will stay there as long as it's useful. So if people decide that they don't want to use it anymore, if it contains no data, if nobody is pulling data from it, then it will be retired after some suitable announcement period. Apart from that, I don't believe that any dates have been set as to when the ITAR will stop being available.
Don't you see a risk that the TLD will forget about the ITAR and just update the root zone?
Yeah, we do see that risk, and certainly we will be informing people if that's the situation they're about to get themselves into. Certainly if we see inconsistencies in the keys in the root zone and the ITAR, we will be asking people, are you sure you really want to do this? And helping them. The IANA staff at ICANN already spend a lot of time sort of dealing with the process of maintaining the interaction between TLDs and the root zone. It's, you know, that's a collaborative process, and we expect that process to carry on.
So is there anybody using ITAR today? I mean, for other than experimental services, test services? Is ITAR actually in some sort of practical operation, or is it just an experiment?
Well, all we can really see from our side is people putting data into the ITAR, and we can see people pulling the ITAR itself from our servers. We can't tell what they're going to use it for. I mean, it's possible people are pulling that down just to make posters, I suppose. But we have to assume that at least some of those people are taking that data and using it to install trust anchors.
I think that the ISC DLV actually pulls the ITAR and adds that data. Isn't that so?
Yes.
That means that it's actually in use.
But there are also operators who take the ITAR and consume it directly and just load it into their name servers after the appropriate validation.
So do we have a date when the TLDs will be able to publish the DS records?
I think the intention is that the TLDs will be able to submit DS records as soon as the route is signed. So as soon as the trust anchor for the root zone has been published on the 1st of July, you'll be able to submit trust anchors.
Do you plan on some kind of slow migration of DS records, or will you accept all of them at the same time?
I wouldn't expect it to be like a thundering herd coming up. the 4th of July, I guess. Then. But I cannot see the problem.
There's nothing saying they can't do it, so it just as any other request, if a TLD wants to make the change and it just happens to be their key information, they can do it just as they would any other change request. So
as a TLD, may I ask our user, the ISP, do you think it's a good thing that we try to publish as fast as possible in our DS record?
Well, I think it's probably better to take one TLD at a time, actually do a slow migration.
But would you like to see that .se publish their DS records as fast as possible at the root after?
Yes, I think that all the TNDs that are signed should put their DS records into the signed root in some good migration pattern as soon as possible after the root is signed. Our plan is to do a validation of the root zone as soon as possible after the root is signed. So we have to do the necessary upgrade of the software and add the root key and actually replace the .se key with the root key. But that is our plan to do it in July if it's possible.
So, sorry, may I continue to ask Taylor? Will you take away the .se as a trust anchor when the root is signed?
When the .se is delegated with the DS record from the root, then we will replace.
Any more questions from the audience? Okay. I think the time is up.